Okay, we're going to begin ordinarily on our model Seder. So we go through the order of the Haggadah. And one of the things we stress is the importance of breaking from the text. That the text should be the basis. And off of this base, we expand. I want us to maybe tonight spend a little bit of time on the expansion. Although in the model Seder we'll do this on one level, we'll try to do it on a different level here. When we come to talk to the children about the Seder, we have many different points where we could start the story of the Seder, and I want us to explore them because on different occasions in my own Seder, I have found myself starting the story at different points. And it helps. The more information we'll have, the more we will be able to animate the Seder, the more we will be able to make the Seder relevant. Our goal on the night of the Seder is to give a story that's relevant. The child is supposed to walk away from the Seder night not only having experienced the most wonderful, fun night of the year, but also gaining an understanding and appreciation of the truth of our tradition. And so the night of the Seder, we will not necessarily be able to plan the conversation that's going to take place. Be prepared that your children will ask you, Hashem put us in Mitzrayim, why do we celebrate that He took us out? And you better be prepared for that, because otherwise, how are you going to run the Seder? At 6, 7, 8, 9, at some point they're going to ask that question. So we're going to begin from many different starting points tonight. And hopefully we will gain enough information that we will have tools to run the Seder. You should not walk into the Seder with predetermined goals that are too specific. Walk in with a lot of information and a general goal. Our general goal is we're giving over to the kids the idea that Hashem is involved in this world. Hashem watches over the world. Hashem took Saddam and tried and punished the Egyptians. Even when things go bad, Hashem is watching over us. There are certain themes that will come across. And we can also mention the application of those themes every day. But depending on the discourse, which should be alive, will depend, that will really define which points will come up. So where does our story begin? So our story begins before creation. Certain things were part of the heavenly plan even before creation. One of them is the Jewish people. One of them is Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. There is a concept, the concept of the Jewish people that had to come to the world. And so on the Seder night, we as a people went out of Mitzrayim. We as a people started our journey, but we have to remind ourselves and mention to our children possibly that this is really something that was part of Hashem's plan already from before creation. There would be a people who would have a job to give over Hashem's Torah to the world. And so the Seder night was in the planning already before creation. So point number one, our starting point is before creation. Now this point is very important because this point touches on another critical concept in Judaism, which is Am Yisrael is the Jewish people, is Hashem's people, irrespective of what they do. Yisrael aval pi shechata Yisraelu. There is the concept that the Kuzari and the Maharal repeatedly stress, the idea of Am Sguna, that there is something about us that Hashem said, you're different, I want you, you're supposed to behave differently, but if your behavior does not reflect that which is different about you, you still do not change your status. I will still have expectations of you. And so even if a Jew tries to rid himself of that label of being a Jew, he won't be able to. The circumcision is a declaration, I am one of God's men. I have a responsibility. So a person can amputate himself. A person can undergo surgeries and try to recover his circumcision, so to speak. Recover is a play on words. The foreskin, but at the end of the day, that's not what makes him Jewish or not Jewish. A Jew is a Jew, and whether he'll have a circumcision or not, he's still a Jew. And so just as the concept of a Jewish people preceded the Jewish people, preceded the creation of the world, so too that stamp that we have is embedded within us, and it is not only a question of what we do. We're responsible for 613, but that's secondary. That's another very important concept. So in Egypt, you have the people who are not living up to the ideals. They're pagans. And that's one of the things that I try to give across to the children at the Seder, that the Jewish people in Mitzrayim were worshipping the sheep. They were worshipping the calf. They were pagans like the Egyptians, and yet they were different. Meaning, if we can walk around with a recognition, I have a responsibility. And even if I'll deny it, I'll still have that responsibility. So then we've come to recognition of our role as the Jewish people. And that's why in Judaism, when we speak about an apostate, we call him a kofer, one who's trying to cover over. Kofer means a denier, or kufra means to cover. He's covering up. He's denying because deep down inside, he still has that test. So one of the themes we're trying to give over, when we speak about the idea that Yetziat Mitzrayim is before creation, that's the idea that there's segula, there is that exceptional element which was there from before creation and is there whether you believe in it or not, whether you're willing to recognize it or not. So that's one point we're trying to give over in the story of Yetziat Mitzrayim. And that is why the night of Yetziat Mitzrayim is already mentioned in the Torah long before the Jews go down to Egypt. The angels will come to Avram and tell him about the birth of Yitzchak on Pesach. Why is that important? Because Pesach is unique in the life of the Jewish people before the Jews went to Egypt. After the Jews went to Egypt, Egypt was a part of the plan. Yafeh. And so I want us perhaps to skip to the end of the Haggadah, to a place which we don't usually get to when we're fully focused. We've already had four cups, at least some of them have perhaps mixed with wine, and it's very hard to focus. So let's skip to the end of the Haggadah. I don't know if Sfardim say this. These are songs that Ashkenazim sing at the end of the Haggadah. I don't know if Sfardim do. Let's turn to page 98 in these Haggadot. I don't even know what they're called. These simple Haggadot. I once saw them on sale, so I bought them for the Machon, so that we'd have them. Page 98, the song of Uvchein Vayihi V'chatzi Alayla. And so, this is what happened in the middle of this night. So we recount at the end of the Haggadah a song about different things that happened at midnight. We're on page 98. Azrov nisimi fleita balayla. Then you made such amazing miracles, extraordinary miracles that night. Berosh hashmuotze alayla, at the head, the beginning of the third of the night. Ger tzedek, the righteous convert. Who is that? Who's the righteous convert? Avraham Avinu. Nitzachto, you gave him victory. Kenechlak lo laila, as he divided his forces in that night, he was chasing the four kings. Remember, his nephew Lot was abducted, so he gives chase after the four kings. And our tradition says this song is that that night, Rashi also mentions this, Vaychalek aleihem laila huva vadav vayakehem. Avraham Avinu, the pasuk says, Vaychalek aleihem laila. He split after them the night. Our tradition is that he said, I'm taking half the night for this miracle to conquer the four kings. The other half leave for my children. This is the night of Pesach. So the first time we encounter Pesach covertly, the Torah doesn't spell it out, it's our tradition, is when Avram goes to war against four kings. So suddenly, this single man who has been looked down upon by the world is ready to take on the four powerful kings who just took down five kings. Just took down giants. These four kings are so powerful that they went against the Rephaim, against the giants, and they were able to beat them too. But Avram is attacking them. He's chasing them on the night of Pesach. It came to pass at midnight. Yes, sir.
They might just say this is for Thursday, but how did the months work before Vachodesh Hazeh Lechem?
Remind me. We'll discuss it. It's a good question. Discussed in the Medrash. Avraham Avinu set up the calendar. It says the tradition of the calendar went down from Adam Arishon, who was taught the calendar, and then it got lost when the Jews went down to Egypt, and Hashem retaught them. But it says they were taught how to do it.
Told them what year it was?
That's another question. We move forward. It's another question that the Kuzri and Ramban disagree. Kuzri says yes, this is part of what Moshe Rabbeinu was miraculously able to explain to the Jewish people, the genealogy from creation until then. And the Ramban says not that many years had passed from Noach to Moshe. 10 generations from Noach to Avram, but Avram already saw Noach. So if there was an overlap where Avram met Noach or Shem, so the world shouldn't have forgotten that quickly, the genealogy. So Ramban, in his letter, Igeret Torat Hashem Timima, holds that the whole world knew Hashem was the creator at the time of Egypt. They had chosen to worship certain forces, but they couldn't deny Hashem being the creator. There's a very big difference in approach to what was going on in the world at the time of Egypt between the Kuzari and the Ramban. Okay, so now I gave you the full answer. Yes. Danta melech grar b'chalom alayla. The full answer I know, I'm saying, could be other Rishonim also discuss it. These are two Rishonim, I know.
There's another part just of I mean, throughout Talmud they say years 365 days. That's not our usual.
Okay. The Talmud speaks about the solar year. That's true.
Shouldn't that be our year? It says it's not 365 days.
No. No, the Talmud recognizes that the solar year is 365 and a quarter days. Yes. Danta melech gao b'chalom alayla. You judge the king of Gerar. There was Avimelech. He had a dream when he abducted Sarah. So God appeared to him and said, what are you doing? So our tradition says that was Pesach night. Who would have known? I don't even know where it's alluded to in the verses. But our tradition is that was the night. You remember Lavan is chasing Yaakov, and the night before he attacks Yaakov, he's ready to kill Yaakov and his children. Arami Ovei Davi, and Aramean was ready to annihilate my father Yaakov. That was Lavan, and on the night of Pesach, that's our tradition. Hashem scared him. Yisrael yasar leil vayuchalo laila. And it was that same Pesach that Yaakov fought the angel. So which night? One of them was the night of the 14th, one of them was the night of the 15th, because they happened back to back, right? Lavan's dream was one night, and the next night Yaakov's fighting the angel. So it was Pesach time. Which one was which night? I don't know. The night of the 15th, the night of the 16th, but this all happened at... So Yaakov Avinu's battle with the angel was on Pesach. That's Zera Bechorei Fatros Machatzta Bachatzi Alayla. Zera, the seed. Bechorei, the firstborn of Petra. Which city is Petra? The capital of Egypt. Petra, Patros. Machatzta, you quashed in the middle of the night. And here is a little known medrash. In the very beginning of Masechet Simachot, it says that at midnight, what happened to the firstborn in Egypt? They became deathly ill. But they didn't die. This is a medrash that people don't know. It says in the beginning of Masechet Simachot, I'll read it to you.
Says there was to keep, to cry keep going out, but it was the people, the sons, they were crying all the time.
Oh, right, you know, very good. Let's see what it says in Masechet Simachot. Masechet Simachot is one of the minor tractates printed after tractate Avodah Zarah. It says like this: Vayivachatzi alayla, it came to pass at midnight. Vashem ikachol v'chobertz Mitzrayim. Hashem hit the firstborns of Egypt. And the pasuk says, "Kili chol becho." Hashem says, "I have possession of all the firstborn Jews." Beyom akoti chol becho v'etz Mitzrayim. On that day when I smote the firstborns of Egypt. Wait a second. One pasuk says it was the middle of the night. The other pasuk, Hashem says, "I took possession of the firstborn Jews on the day that I hit the firstborn Egyptians." Was it day or night? Says Rabbi Yochanan, even though Hashem hit them a blow that was a deathly blow at midnight, their soul was fluttering in and out of them ad haboker, till the morning. Mashal idiot omer natatapat lenar, etc. There's a common folk saying that says, you give a child bread, let his mother know that you've given him bread. If you do a favor to your neighbor's kid, let them know you did a favor, because then they'll appreciate it. Otherwise, you didn't accomplish much. So you want to promote friendship? Your neighbor should know you gave his kid lunch? Make sure he knows it. So the Medrash doesn't explain how. In the Talmud, it says how. It says, let's say you gave the kid macaroni. So don't give him a napkin to wipe off his lips from the ketchup. So when he comes home, his mom will see the ketchup around and he'll say, why you got ketchup around your lips, right? So that's what the Gemara says. Afakadosh Baruch Hu Amar Odi Alevanai Amita Hamshateket Azot. Hashem said, let my children know this debilitating death that I've brought upon the Egyptians. Shesoneim Echmetimma, how their enemies are dying. And that's why Hashem said, keep them alive so that my children will see how I've caused their enemies to die. If the Jews would just leave Egypt and something happened back in Egypt last night and they don't know what, so they don't know what. So that's why it says in Masechet Simachot, in the introduction, this is the opening paragraph, sorry, of Masechet Simachot, that they were alive, they were beaten, they were almost dead. And that's, you quash them in the middle of this night. The Egyptians couldn't find their strength as they got up that night. Their strength was the first morn. Now, we have a tradition, it says in the Medrash, that on the 14th, we have the night of the 15th is Pesach. What happened on the 14th? So the Medrash says, why is it called Makat Bechorot? All the other plagues are not called the beating of the firstborn, the beating of the locust, not called Makat. You guys know the Medrash? So the Medrash says like this. Before the Medrash, the Jerusalem Talmud says the firstborns in Egypt had a higher status. They were worshipped, the firstborn in Egypt. So the Medrash says that the firstborns got together and they came together as a union and they said to Pharaoh, could you please let the Jews go? They don't want to die. And Pharaoh said, get lost. No way. And so the firstborns took up arms. And it says there was civil war in Egypt. And there was a massive war where the firstborns insisted, let them go, we don't want to die. And they lost. And so on that night is the continuation of the plague. And the Egyptians don't find their strength the next morning. Tisat negid charoshet silita bechochevei laila. Now this is another totally different story in Jewish history. Tisat negid charoshet. So negid is the master. Charoshet is the name of a place. It says that Sisera was the master of a place called Charoshet HaGoyim. So Sisera, if we move forward in Jewish history two or three centuries, in the period of the judges, so it says the worst enemy in Jewish history after Pharaoh was Sisera. We don't understand why. If the Talmud wouldn't have told us that, as you read the book of Judges, it's not so clear why Sisera was such a terrible general. But it says that Sisera was as bad as Pharaoh, to the point where he was so brilliant that had he lost the whole war, but he would have escaped alive, he could have come back, recreated the army, and destroyed us once again. So again, you read the book of Judges, and it doesn't seem to indicate, I mean, to my limited understanding, why was that period worse? We had so many, we had 11 different nations that subdued us during the period of the Judges, and our sages singled out, and they said, you should know, the period of Sisera was the worst. I don't know why, but that's what they say. And then our sages say, you should know that what happened, the way Sisera was taken down, was a miracle not so different than the story of Pesach when it happened on Pesach. Our sages say Sisera took his forces through a valley, and that valley shouldn't have had water in it, in the Kishon Valley. And then Hashem caused a massive flood to come down the Kishon Valley and destroy his whole army. And it says it was as miraculous as the Exodus from Egypt. And here in the song it says, it also happened the night of Pesach. So in Jewish history, the night of Pesach keeps on resurfacing as a night where Hashem miraculously saves the Jewish people. So far we learned about Avraham Avinu. We've learned about the story of Avimelech who abducted Sarah. Now the story of Avimelech is dangerous because that's a time where Avram and Sarah already have a promise that Sarah will have a child. And shortly thereafter, Sarah is pregnant. So it's pretty pivotal that that night, Avimelech can't touch her. We have the story of Lavan the Aramean who wanted to annihilate the Jewish people. We have the story of Esav's angel who chases Yaakov. And on Pesach, he loses the battle. Then we move on to Egypt. And then we continue to the story of Sisera. So far we've had six occurrences on Pesach from Avraham Avinu through Pesach. That's what we've seen so far in the story. Hi, Benny.
I was wondering, because when we were learning about Yetzias Mitzrayim from the Parsha, you said it wasn't so clear that the Egyptians knew that the
correct
plagues were happening. But from
wait, what do you mean by the plagues were happening?
The plagues were from Moshe. Moshe was saying, let my people go, and Pharaoh was not letting that happen, and because of that, the plagues were happening.
I said that from the text, we wouldn't necessarily know how much the Egyptian people were in the know, but I meant it as a point to ponder. It's not a conclusion, it's a question, because at the onset of the plagues, Hashem says, V'yade'u Mitzrayim ki ani Hashem. The Egyptians will know I'm running the show. It certainly sounds like the Egyptians were in the know that Hashem was doing this. I said that from the text, we would have to wonder, because in the text, you see Moshe communicating repeatedly with the king and the leadership. How did the Egyptians know? I don't know the answer to that.
I think just because from the rebellion of the firstborn, it very much seems that they knew.
Right. So you could answer simply that we find many of the conversations took place in the presence of the advisors and the wise men, and so word kept getting out. That would be a simple answer. I just raised it as a point to ponder. I didn't raise it as a conclusion, more as a question. We come back to our song. Ya'atz mecharef linofef ivui hovashta pegarav balayla. This is the next phenomenal miracle we have on tradition, happened on the night of Pesach. The blasphemous one. So that's Sancheiriv. That Sancheiriv looked down at Jerusalem, and he's called Minofef Yado Har Bat Zion. Sancheiriv, who had conquered so many countries. Sancheiriv had conquered Iraq, Syria, Lebanon, Jordan, Egypt, Sudan, downward into Africa. And he comes and he says, I heard there's this wonderful capital, there's this amazing city that is always the threat to the western side of the Euphrates. Phenomenal kings, dangerous people. He's conquered all of northern Israel and exiled 10 million Jews. And then he's told by his sorcerers, if you attack Jerusalem today, you'll win. And he reaches the mountaintop that overlooks Jerusalem. And he looks down. And he sees Jerusalem and its fortification, and he waves his hand mockingly. Yinofef yado, the Navi says, he waves his hand, Har Bat Zion, at the mountain of the daughter of Zion, at the mountain of Jerusalem, and Sancheiriv says, what's all the ruckus about? That little city, I've taken down half of the European continent, half of the African continent. That little city is supposed to disturb me? What was I rushing for? Bring out the wine. Let's get drunk. He says, leave it. We'll do it. We'll deal with it. What's the rush? His sorcerers had told him, you attack today, you win. You wait, you lose. And he said, what you guys talking about? That little city, after all our military campaigns, so he is Mecharef, the blasphemous one, because he said, the God of Israel shouldn't bother me. I've taken down all the other pagan gods. He put down Hashem. That's why it's called Mecharef. Now we're getting there. Lenofef, to wave his hand at Ivui, the most desired place on earth. Hashem says, that's my favorite place. And he said, I want to conquer it, but I'll get to it. Hovashta pegarav balayla. Our tradition is that when Sancheiriv was camping around Jerusalem, and he had over a million soldiers camping outside Jerusalem, and he was located on one side of the city, even though he had so many forces. So our tradition is that when the Navi records in the book of Kings and in the book of Yeshaya that a plague hit his troops and almost no one walked out alive, they woke up in the morning and found everyone falling like flies. That was the night of Pesach. It was the midnight of Pesach. So that's the next time that this wonderful night appears as a night of salvation for the Jewish people. So that's Hovashta Pegarav. You dried out his corpses, the corpses of his men. Now it says that they didn't have where to sleep. So what they would do is they would take out the bodies from the graves and they'd sleep there. That's where, so suddenly they found themselves dead in the graves. Kara Baal. So Baal is the Babylonian idol. They believe that their god is called Baal. So when the Navi wants to describe the destruction of Babylon, the Navi mocks the Babylonian god. And he says the following description. I'm paraphrasing the prophet Yeshaya. And he says to Babylon, he says, your God is crouching, trying to relieve himself in the bathroom, and it's not working. Kara Baal. He says, your idol Baal is crouching, trying to go to the bathroom. Kores Nevo. And he's collapsed. The poor thing. That's his mocking of the Babylonian idol. Umatzavo. And the whole foundation of the Babylonian Empire crumbled. Beishon Laila. In the darkness of this night, It was on the night of Pesach that the Persian Empire decimated the Babylonian Empire. You remember we learned many different angles as to how this happened. Was it that night that they purposely took out the vessels of the temple? It was that night that Koresh figured out how to redirect the Euphrates from filling the moat around Babylon, and then he could just travel into Babylon. It was that night that the Babylonians were celebrating some kind of party that they were all drunk, and he took advantage of that and attacked. Whatever it was, our tradition is, it was also Pesach. Le'ish chamudot nigla raz chazut laila. Daniel saw the vision of when the Jews would be redeemed from Egypt, also on the night of Pesach. Mishtaker bichlei kodesh, the one who allowed himself to get drunk with the holy vessels, ne'erag bo balayla, was killed on that night. So the regular reading would be, this is talking about Belshazzar, who was killed that night when the Babylonians attacked. And we learned two versions to that. We learned that he was killed and then the Persians attacked, right? We learned two versions as to how that story played itself out. Noshami bor arayot poter biatut elayla. Daniel was saved from the lion's den. He who was able to figure out the scary dreams of the night. Sinan atar agagi v'chatav sarim balayla. This is written clearly in Megillat Esther, that the hatred of Haman came spewing forth on the night of Pesach, the night leading into Pesach, right? When was the decree written? You arose your victory against him when Achashverosh couldn't sleep in the night during Pesach. So again, we're looking at all of Pesach, not only the night of the 15th, right? The whole story of Esther takes place on Pesach. Purat tidroch leshomer mami laila. So the Navi in the end of Yeshaya describes the following scene. I look out, says the Navi. I see a man running. He's approaching me. His clothing are dirty. And I ask him, Madua, why are your clothing soiled? Why do your clothing seem stained as though you have just been pressing grapes? Dancing, you're right, they used to dance on the grapes and that would make the wine. So he says, Madua, Madua Adom Lilbushecha, why are your clothing red? Uvgadecha Kedorech Vegat, and your clothing are soiled like someone who is standing in the wine press pressing the grapes. So he says, Pura Darachti Levadi Umeamim En Ish Iti, I alone trampled. No nation came to help me. That's the description of how Hashem says, I will personally intervene and trample Edom. When Edom attacks Israel, so the ultimate salvation that's yet to come, Hashem says, I'll do it alone. The vision Isaiah sees, Yeshaya sees a vision of a man coming and his clothing are soiled. The bottom of his clothing, it's as though grapes have splattered on his clothing. Hashem says, yeah, it's me. I've been stepping on Edom all alone. Leshomer mami laila. He's described as, I am protecting them from the night. The night is the time of exile. Hashem says, in another prophecy, Shomer ma milaila, Shomer ma milel. The Navi describes like this, it's a play on words. Hashem watches of the night. Hashem, what has he said? Ma milel could mean what Hashem has been watching from the night. And the word milel in Aramaic also means to talk. What's the guard been saying? The guard's been saying, Atavoker vegam laila. You've encountered the Jewish people have had periods of day, periods of night. Atavoker vegam laila, im tivayun be'ayu shuvu etayu. You want the redemption? Ask for it. Do tshuva. I'm ready to give it to you. So that's Purat tidroch leshomer ma milayla, tzarach shomer v'sach atavoker v'gam layla. That's what the guard yells and says. you've encountered days, you've encountered nights, I want to give you the final day. And that's up to you to do tshuva. That's the that prophecy. Shomer ma'milay la shomer ma'milel. And then we conclude the song. Karev yom Hashem, we're waiting for you to bring close the day. Asher u'lo yom ve'lo laila. Hashem describes a day is coming. It will be not a day nor a night. It will be something special, a new period, a new era, not what you're familiar with. Ram, the exalted one, Hoda, let the world know, ki lecha yom av lecha laila, you control not only the daytime, also the nighttime, all our period of exile, you've been watching over us. Shomrim afked liyircha kol hayom v'chol halayla, reappoint guards over your city all day and all night. Ta'ir kol yom cheshkat laila, make our night light up like the day. Our sages say that's what's unique of the night of Pesach. We're awake as though it's daytime. Usually you go to sleep at night. Not on Pesach. Pesach's night is day. Night is the time of exile. The night of Pesach is the night of redemption. Ordinarily we speak about night as a difficult time, not the night of Pesach. So that's the conclusion of that song. So we began with a description of Pesach being part of God's plan from creation. Now we move forward to the next stop of Pesach. So what did we learn about? We learned about all the redemptions that happened on the Seder night. Where's our next starting point for Pesach? Our next starting point for Pesach is at Avraham Avinu. And here we have to, this is another starting point for our kids. Our next starting point is Brit Ben Abtarim. Hashem makes a covenant with Avram, and there were years where my Seder began with this. Hashem tells Avram, Yadot, Teda, I want you to know, Ki Geriezer Chabeltz Lolahim, they will be strangers in a foreign land, Vavadum Vinutam, they will make them work, and then I'm taking them out. So our next starting point for the Haggadah is the story of the covenant. Now, that's very important, again, if we'll say it in children's terminology. A kid comes home and says, Abba, I don't want to go to sleepaway camp. Abba, I'm scared of going to high school. A kid can have all kinds of fears. I don't want to do it. And what do you say as a parent? It's going to be all right. And you're going to come out of it and you're going to be a man. There are kids that say, I'm scared of learning how to swim. There are all kinds of things that children are scared of, and it's normal to be scared. Avraham Avinu was also scared. What? Okay. So, our next starting point is the covenant. And we tell the child, depending on if this comes up in the conversation, this was part of Hashem's plan. It was part of the plan that we would be in Egypt for 400 years. Hashem promises Avram, you're going to come out and get the land of Israel. You're going to come out and get the Torah. You have to undergo Mitzrayim. And here we enter a concept which is sometimes difficult for children to understand. Why did we have to go to Mitzrayim? And this breaks down into numerous answers, which are complementary. You have to figure out which one the child can understand. Point number one is the Sephorno. But maybe we won't start with the Sephorno. We'll start with the Gemara and Tosfos and Shabbos. Following scenario. You have two kids, and you tell them they're going to share a room. So, if they care for one another, you're going on a camping trip. You tell them they're going to share a sleeping bag and a tent. So, that could be the most fun in the world, or that could be the most painful in the world. If the two of them are going to enter the tent and decide they're going to make it miserable for one another, so suddenly, give me more of the sleeping bag. No, you give me more of the sleeping bag. He pinches him back. They could spend the whole night miserable. They could come out of that tent black and blue and say this was the worst trip we ever had. Right? But if the two care for one another, then they'll have a phenomenal trip. It'll be a lot of fun. They'll even have great memories from sharing that tent and the sleeping bag. The Ribon Shalom says you're going to undergo a period where you will be strangers. You won't be masters of the land of Israel. How will that period play itself out depends on our behavior. If we are kind to one another, then that period will play itself out well. When Yosef and the brothers have jealousy, when Yaakov gives Yosef preferential treatment, now Yaakov has every reason to think about it. He thinks Yosef's an orphan. Yosef has to grow up without a mother. Let me make him feel special. And he is special. He is brilliant. He is extraordinary. And Yaakov makes a mistake. And he treats him differently than the other kids. And that hatred that evolves between the brothers, or sages say, that's why we suffered in Egypt. Now that's a very important point. Your kid is going to ask you, Hashem put us in Egypt. So why do I celebrate that He took us out? The answer is no. Hashem didn't say we would have to suffer. Hashem said 400 years would pass, and the first 190 years passed without terrible suffering. We were working in Israel. We had to pay some taxes to the common people. We weren't our own masters. Okay. And that was a fulfillment of the prophecy, you will be strangers in a foreign land, because we didn't own the land of Israel. Ah, when did things start getting bad for the Jews? When the Jews started getting bad to one another. And that's what Moshe Rabbeinu says. He looks and says, why are my brothers suffering more than any other people? Why is it that even among the slaves, they look down at the Jews? Why are we worse than everyone else? And then Moshe Rabbeinu says, I see why. Because we cannot fend for one another. We cannot take care of our own. And this is what Yosef was scared of. When Yosef plays the whole trick on the brothers, he wants to bring them to a point where they're ready to give up their lives for Benjamin. Yosef wants them to say, we're not letting go. Because Yosef knows that if we go down to Mitzrayim united, then the whole Egypt experience will be a decent one. When we turn on one another, as we find the Jews were doing, they were giving one another in to the Gestapo. Each one was telling on the other one. So then the Egyptian exile became worse. And that's why the Pasuk describes Vayishritzu. The Jewish people became like vermin. The Jewish people multiplied. Vayishritzu, you could read it as, oh, they multiplied in huge numbers. But our sages say they're purposely compared to vermin to tell us about their behavior. They were like vermin. And so Moshe Rabbeinu says, if I save a Jew's life and I kill an Egyptian, and the Jew says, I'm going to tell Pharaoh, I just saved his life. And he can go tell Pharaoh, and that's what we discussed in the Parsha class, that if Dasan knew he could get away with it, that means the culture allowed for it to happen. Our culture allows for certain things. We give a message, there's a subliminal message that goes out from each of us which says, you can get away with certain things. There are things you won't get away with, there are things you will get away with. And we give that message, we give it to one another, we give it to the leadership. Every one of us knows there are certain things we can get away with, certain things we cannot get away with. Think about it.
You speak also about...
It's not only what we say, there's an atmosphere. You walk into certain shuls, and the gabbai runs the show, or the rabbi runs the show, and you know you're not going to get away with something. You know you can't do that.
Putting a talit over your head?
In certain shuls, yeah. There are shuls where you walk in, and they tell you where to sit down. You feel like I can't budge. But you feel like there's law and order here. The coming back to the suffering of the Jewish people in Mitzrayim. So our next starting point is the covenant Brit Ben Abtarim, but within that we see the Gemara in Shabbos that says we suffered because of the enmity between the brothers, and Tosfos' explanation that the whole exile didn't have to play itself out this way. So then we have to take responsibility for our suffering. That's another important theme we speak to the children about. The idea that sinat chinam, baseless hatred, lashon hara, they've been the snake, the serpent that's been biting us from Adam and Eve, through Mitzrayim, through the destruction of the Second Temple. A recurring theme in our history. And that's, again, a message that kids can resonate with. Again, are we going to mention all of this every year? Not necessarily, but now you have tools. I'm trying to build our tool chest about the importance of the night and about the evolvement of Mitzrayim. So we discussed the starting point of creation, the starting point of Brit Ben Abtarim Avraham Avinu, We move on to Yaakov Avinu and the hatred of the children, and then we've descended into Egypt as 70 people. Now that's another important point to stress to the children, how we grew as a people. We started as 70. 70. And within 210 years, we number 2 million. So that's... okay. Now let's start discussing different midrashim about the stories of what happened in Egypt. Okay? Let's look at our Haggadah. Kadesh, we make Kiddush. At the Seder, there are going to be certain overt themes and certain underlying themes. The story goes, I think it was the Baal HaTanya, it was one of the Hasidish Rebbe's, I think it was the Baal HaTanya, that he came home to the Seder and he asked the children, tell me, what is Kadesh? So the child says, the father comes home and makes Kiddush. So the Baal HaTanya says, can you tell me more? So the kid says, no, the father comes home and makes Kiddush. So the Rebbe says, did your Rebbe teach you anything else? He says, no. He called in the elementary school Rebbe and he said to him, our tradition is that you tell the child, the father rushes home to make Kiddush so that the children don't fall asleep. So the Rebbe says, why is that so important? So he said to him, that's our tradition. And there's an illusion in that tradition. Kadesh, the father rushes home to make Kiddush. That's talking about our Father in heaven. He is rushing to sanctify us, to bring the redemption, so that the children don't fall asleep. We, the children of Israel, shouldn't fall into a deep slumber. We're in exile, but Hashem's still going to catch us before we lose it and bring us to redemption. We begin with Kiddush. And in Kiddush we also make a Shechiyanu. We have the holiday. We have all the beautiful mitzvot of the night. And we're going to move forward to Magid. We're going to move forward to Magid. And again, I want to go to parts which ordinarily people are conked out by. So let's go to the end of Magid. Page 50 in the Zagadot, Bechol Dor Vador. You guys have it? Page 50 in these editions, the end of Magid, Bechol Dor Vador. And again, we discussed last night how the Seder is really the instruction book. Off of the Seder, you have to speak to the kids. So, at this point, if I haven't yet done it, I will usually ask the kids, can someone pass me a cracker? I'm a little hungry. And the little ones will go, oh, but it's Pesach. We don't have crackers. Now, they all know how to say the Manishtana, but is it alive? Meaning they'll sing the Manishtana for me, but now I want them to sense it if they haven't sensed it yet. And I'll say, come on, no one has a cracker for me? Maybe a pretzel? Come on, but I'm hungry. No one has a pretzel? And they'll say no, and I'll say, why? And they'll say, it's Pesach, and I'll say, so? So give me a cracker. I won't tell anyone. Can I just have one cracker? And they'll say, Abba, come on. Okay, why aren't we eating crackers tonight? So if they haven't yet come to the realization, again, there are going to be little kids there, and you have to figure out at what point in the Haggadah to do this, because you don't want to lose them. So sometimes, the way I break up my Seder, I start with the little kids. I do the same thing at the Shabbos table. While the little kids are focused at the beginning of the meal, I'll talk to them. If they're busy eating, so I'll talk to the older kids, and when they're available, when they're focused, then I'll talk to them. But the little kids come first. You work your way up in age. Why don't we eat crackers tonight? Why aren't we eating crackers tonight? Why aren't we eating crackers tonight? So Hashem says, tonight we want to remember how fast we left Mitzrayim and that they didn't have a chance to make crackers. They could only make matzahs, which you make when you're working very fast. So we don't eat crackers. We want to remember how fast they left Mitzrayim. So here we have multiple themes of the night. One theme is, I'm remembering what happened then. The second theme is, I'm still the chosen people. And the third theme is, it's still going to happen. There's still another redemption coming. So there are really three ideas that connect past, present, future. Every generation, a person has to see himself as though he himself went out of Mitzrayim. Tell your kids on that day, this is why Hashem did it for me when I left Egypt. So, we'll finish the paragraph, but the first concept is, we're telling the story first person. And there are definitely younger children who have to hear it in the first person. When you talk to your child who's 4 years old, 5 years old, and you tell them, how many years ago was Yetzias Mitzrayim? Help me out, guys. How many years ago was it?
Well, 2, 4, 8.
Okay.
5, 7, 7.
How many years ago was Yetzias Mitzrayim? No. Mr. Benny is going to do the math for us. So, our fathers were not alone in this redemption, and Avotanu Galimem, Hashem redeemed us as well. Shnema Avotanu Tzit Misham, Hashem took us out of there, and we'll finish it off in a minute. 3,329 years ago was Yetzias Mitzrayim. 3,329. Okay, 3,329 years ago. 3,329. Go tell a 4-year-old 3,329. He doesn't know what 2 years ago means. So you have to tell them, this is the story that happened to me. So in the story, you tell them over, this is what happened to Abba. In their mind, you know, my kids are going to ask me, Abba, did you see dinosaurs? Right? They want to know. So part of the mitzvah of telling over Yetzias Mitzrayim is, tell it over like it happened to me. And it's not only tell them, I have to imagine it. That means when we sit at the Seder, we should pause and think, what was Egypt like? And at this point, some people at our Seder really don't like when I do this, but when I fulfill this part of the Seder, I start describing a week in the life of a Jew in Egypt. So, again, I won't wait to this point of the Seder. At some point in the Seder, I'm going to pause and tell the kids, let's describe what happened in Mitzrayim. Let's take a family. What will we call the father? Alan. What?
Merrill.
Right? Loshinu is Shmam. He still has a Jewish name. So his name is Shmerel or Shmuel. Okay. What will we call the mother? So usually I'll start differently. I'll say, we'll call the father Ahmed. What are we calling the father? And the kids say, Ahmed. And I say, no, the Jews in Egypt didn't change their names. So his name was Yitzchak, his name was Shmerel, his name wasn't Ahmed. What was the mother's name? Isabella? No. They had a Jewish name. She was Rebecca or something. Okay, so we have Yitzchak and Rebecca. And they have children at home. They have a set of 6 twins. 6 children they just had 2 years ago. 6 2-year-olds. And what?
6
tuplets. So these 6 tuplets are home. And it's 3:00 in the morning. And their mother sets out a bunch of matzahs for them, the only food they could prepare. And she has to go out to work. It's still dark outside. And she's going to start putting bricks. Now, her hands are always bleeding. They always see their mother with worn hands because she's working out in the field. And the thorns pierce her hands. And the stalks of hay pierce her feet. And when she comes home at night, they can even see the bones of her feet coming protruding through her skin because day after day she's wounding herself, dealing, making mortar. So it's 3:00 in the morning and there's no butter at home. There's no discussion of, I want bamba, I want bisli. The kids know that when they wake up in the morning, Abba and Ima aren't around. They're out working already. Abba is so tired at the end of the day that there are many days that Ima has to go out to the field and tell him, come home. And he says, for what? In a few hours, they're going to come and tell us to go back out to work. Let me sleep here. And now the kids are at home. They're waiting to see Abba and Ima, but they're not going to see him all day. So you have these sextuplets sitting at home. They have a few pieces of matzah, and they're going to have to play alone. They're going to have to figure out what they're doing with their time. No one's going to teach them. There's no school. There's no gun. No one's going to educate them. And Abba and Ima are out in the field working. So it's 3 o'clock in the morning, and Ima starts setting out pieces of matzah for them. And the Egyptian comes knocking on the door, and he has a whip in his hand. And he says, get out. What's with you? Why are you late? And they rush out. And it's the darkness of the night. And Ima goes out to the field, and she has to start dealing with the mortar. Abba's going out to the field, and the Egyptian is starting to whip him. Why didn't you prepare more? Why aren't you getting ready? Kids have noticed that when Abba comes home, he has all these red marks on his back. Now, depending on the age of the children, you can't scare the wits out of them, right? They have to be at an age where they can hear such things. Abba and Ima, it's already 8 o'clock in the morning and they haven't had anything to eat. Now the Egyptians give them a 3-minute break. They quickly collect some fruit from the trees. They eat something. They try to drink something. Their 3 minutes are up. They have to get back to work. Now they're going to be stepping on the mortar. And so they're stepping on the mortar. They enter this big barrel. They pour in water. They pour in the debris and they start stepping on the mortar. They're working the mortar, they're creating the mortar with their own feet. The Egyptian stands out there and looks at them and says, you're missing the quota. You're missing the quota. The time is ticking. You're not going to make enough bricks today. And they're getting very worried because just yesterday they saw their neighbor, one of his sextuplets was thrown into the mortar. And they know that if they don't make the quota, then one of those children is going to be part of the mortar today. And so they work even harder. The Medrash says it was a descendant of the tribe of Binyamin who was with his wife stepping on the mortar. Their feet were being pierced by the pieces of hay. And as they were doing it and not meeting the quota, the Egyptians took their own baby and threw it under their feet. And as they're standing there and they cannot do anything because the Egyptian is over them with a whip, they see the blood of their own child swirling between their toes as they are stepping on the mortar. It is that moment that is described when the Pasuk says, Hashem heard, Hashem knew, and Hashem reacted. Vayishma Elokim vayeda Elokim. Vayishma Elokim et na'akat b'nei Israel. Hashem heard the cry of the Jewish people. So Chazal tell us it was that moment when these two husband and wife were standing in the mortar watching as their own bleeding was mixing with their child's bleeding as they knew they couldn't get out. Their cry at that moment was what pierced the heavens. There are two types of prayer. There's a prayer that's composed of words. There's a prayer that's composed of emotion. Chazal tell us, Hashem heard na'akat b'nei Israel. The Jewish people were crying without words. They didn't know what to say. It was just, save us, Ribon Shel Olam. And so we commemorate the mortar with the charoses, because the mortar was the worst labor that they did.
Why do we make it so sweet?
Who makes it sweet?
Traditionally, it's made of nuts and dates, right? Wine.
We'll talk about it. One of the themes of the Seder night is that we left Mitzrayim headed somewhere, headed to the land of Israel. We have to realize there's a very big difficulty that we have. We're Olim Chadashim. Some are Chozrim B'Tshuva, some are Gerim. All of us are Olim Chadashim. One of the things that tends to happen when a person makes Aliyah is that the next generation wants to go back. They want to go to Chutz Laaretz. Why does this happen? One reason is that the children grow up with a constant recognition that Chutz Laaretz is a part of them. whether you like it or not, your children might very much grow up feeling like they're a product of Israel and Chutz Lartz. People can augment the situation by speaking about how in Chutz Lartz you could buy a pack of batteries for $3. In Chutz Lartz you buy a big bottle of hydrogen peroxide for 99 cents. In Chutz Lartz you get a 2-liter bottle of Coke for 99 cents. In Chutz Lartz people don't cut the line. In Chutz Lartz people say please and thank you. In Chutz Lartz you wouldn't walk into a bakery and see people sticking their hands into all the bread and baked goods that you're buying. In Chutz Lartz they would revoke the license of a restaurant where you don't see soap at the sink. You could say a lot of interesting lines about Chutz Lartz and develop within your children this perspective that Chutz Lartz is this magical land where things are just better. It's a mistake that's very easy to make. In Chutz Lartz, they drive bigger cars. Yes?
Related to the point a couple seconds ago about the quarter and the
feed. So wait a second. One of the themes of the Seder night is that leaving Mitzrayim was to enter the land of Israel. This is a golden opportunity to give a message without spelling it out that one of the greatest gifts in our lives is the fact that we're living in Israel. And to give over that appreciation as a by the way. If you try to spell it out and hammer it in, you might not get it. The kid might go the other way. But if it's an underlying message, which it is in the Seder, Leman aviu tanu letet lanu et haaretz, so then you can get that message in. Look at how lucky we are. We're living the dream. We're here. They left Mitzrayim, veiveti etchem, to come to the land of Israel. And they didn't. It's one of the things I tell my kids. I tell them, you know, we're getting to do. Who can tell me something that we're doing that Moshe Rabbeinu only dreamt of? Moshe Rabbeinu and the whole generation that left Mitzrayim only dreamt of doing, and that is living in the land of Israel. So it's a remarkable theme that is underlying in the Agadah. We are out of time. Bezrat Hashem, we will meet again Thursday night.